from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Last year, Kevin Weston was riding high. He had just won a journalism fellowship at Stanford, and he was raising two daughters with his partner, Latifa Simon, a civil rights activist and a MacArthur Genius Fellow. Then doctors told him he had leukemia, and he needed to find a bone marrow donor by the end of the month. But Kevin is African-American, and African-Americans comprise only 7% of registered donors. Kevin and Latifa join us to share their story. We'll also discuss the low rate of minority donor participation and the long road to a successful transplant on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of our Forum program. A Bay Area-based couple have started a national effort to register 1,000 African-Americans as possible donors. And the fact is that bone marrow transplants are exceedingly difficult for African-Americans as well as for other ethnic minorities because of the low number of registered donors. In the case of Kevin Weston, an award-winning new media journalist with a rare form of leukemia, it has proven highly elusive and terribly frustrating. He and a civil rights activist and MacArthur Genius Award-winning wife, Latifa Simon, have begun their campaign not only for Kevin's sake, but for the thousands of African-Americans and people of color around the country who desperately need but cannot find a match. And joining us in studio are Kevin Weston and Latifa Simon. Good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you.
And with us also for this hour is Jonathan Leong, who is founder of the Asian American Donor Program. Good morning.
Thank you.
And Manali Patel, who is postdoctoral fellow in hematology and oncology at the Stanford School of Medicine. She also is a researcher at the Clinical Excellence Research Center, which focuses on innovations in cancer care. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to all of you. And I wanted to begin with Kevin and Latifa and begin by sort of giving a little bit of historical background here. Kevin, you were just admitted as a Knight Fellow at Stanford. Latifa had just started on a program as director of the Rosenberg Foundation. I'm just sort of setting the stage here and was about to begin at Stanford as a Sears Fellow in social entrepreneurship. And you wake up and you've got a sore throat and find out in no time you got 3 weeks to live. I mean, it almost sounds beyond anything we think of as plausible.
Well, it definitely was surreal for me. We just moved to Palo Alto from Oakland, where we made our home. And
we're having a little problem with our microphone. Latifa, can you swing yours over to Kevin so that we can hear him?
Okay, I'll just come over here. And I woke up with a sore throat, and I lived with it for a couple of days. And finally, I figured out this was the worst sore throat I had ever had. And I went to Santa Clara Emergency Room. And I woke up about 2.5 weeks later. It was just like that. It was 3 days before my birthday, which was August 30th. So I went into the hospital on August 27th, and I didn't wake up until,
A couple weeks later.
Yeah, about 2.5 weeks later. So that was really the thing, was trying to survive an infection that had grown in my throat and around my mouth.
This is a rare form of leukemia, right? I mean, when did you get the diagnosis? This is a flesh-eating bacteria.
It was the same. It was the same day. After I got a couple of blood tests, and my doctor, now his name is Dr. Katzel, came down and said, "You probably have cancer." And then I fell asleep, and my wife knows what went on after that.
In fact, what went on after that was 5 emergency operations, a month in the ICU, and multiple hospitalizations. Latifa, this has been quite an ordeal. And you two decided to get married, I guess, too.
Well, Kevin and I met about 5 years ago. For the first year we were friends, we met in then District Attorney Tom LaHarris's office. Kevin was doing a press conference on ethnic media with our now Attorney General. And, you know, for folks who know Kevin in the Bay Area, he had a huge afro and a North Face backpack and tons of jackets. And I was just like, this kid is interesting. And we both had this amazing love for working with young people. You know, you fast forward years later, we decided to make a family together. We planned and had a baby. Her name is Layla. She is fabulous. And we kept saying, we're going to get married. We're going to get married. We're going to get married. Well, why don't we get married on your birthday? We'll just go to City Hall. We'll figure it out. We already devoted our lives to each other. Well, 3 days before Kevin's birthday, our lives changed forever. And again, not only was he told that he had one of the rarest forms of leukemia ever. Only 10 people in the United States are diagnosed with TPLL leukemia each year. It's T-cell prolymphocytic leukemia. And hematologists, such as my new friend on the left of me, she can assert that, you know, all the textbooks will say, wow, this is a really not okay leukemia. So not only were we told that he had a very rare leukemia, we also learned in that instance that he had a flesh-eating bacteria. And the residents in the ICU told me, well, Latifa, you need to start gathering your friends and family to say goodbye. So to somebody that I love, somebody that I look up to, someone that I had made family with, to begin the process of saying goodbye, it wasn't acceptable. Our friends begin to descend upon the hospital. One is in your green room right now, Ayoka Turner, who's a celebrated community organizer, and said, you know, Kevin's not done. So he's going to wake up from this coma, and we're going to start fighting. And that's what we've done. It's not only about Kevin now. We understand that we understand the facts and the figures about bone marrow transplantation. It's now about us understanding as activists and organizers that we have to change the odds for every person in the emergency room, like my husband, who gets this kind of diagnosis.
Well, for Kevin, the match would be more likely if he could find someone of his own ancestry, I mean, ethnically based. And the problem is that only 7% of the 10 million registered potential donors are African American.
That's right. And for folks like us, you know, we felt that before the diagnosis that we were super conscious about everything that had to do with racial justice, environmental justice. I mean, you name the quote-unquote justice issue, and I think Kevin and I thought we were up on it and we were completely, we were aware. We didn't understand.
You were blindsided.
We had no idea about blood cancers and bone marrow transplants and the disparity until this issue became our lives. So even folks like the progressive communities that we live in and that we're a part of, this became an opportunity for us to begin education with those folks who totally want to make sure that we're folks like us can beat the odds. They just haven't been given the opportunity.
Well, let's talk a little bit, in fact, Kevin, with you, why these numbers are so low. We'll hear also from Jonathan Leong, because the same is true in numbers relatively for the Asian American community. It's about 10% Hispanic, 7% Asian Americans, and 7%, as I said, African Americans. But distinctively with African Americans, you keep reading about, well, the Tuskegee experiments, you know, with syphilis being injected into African Americans, or just the need to trust and fear of needles, all kinds of things. What do you attribute it to?
Well, I think that those are key points. Our experience with the healthcare system in this country is different, and from our white counterparts. I think also you mentioned the Tuskegee experiment, the history of you know, healthcare for Black people. You know, from slavery until now has been one of lack and disparity and ignorance a lot of times. Like Latifa just said, we had no idea. I think I had a cursory knowledge of some kind of disparity in this area. But it wasn't until that I got diagnosed and we started doing research that we figured out not only is this a major disparity, but this is something that we could probably affect. That this is something that we could help change. I am extremely blessed that I have family and friends and good health insurance. And I happen to be in Palo Alto, which is relatively close to my home. So when we were in ICU, we had to get kicked out of ICU. There were hundreds of people who came to see me while I was asleep. So their prayers brought me back. But it also brought me back to do something. You know, we have the capacity. I can walk around. I'm not the typical cancer patient in that a lot of the chemo that I'm going through right now doesn't really affect me in the way that it affects a lot of other people. So we can move around. And so since we both come from an activist and organizer background, it was a natural thing for us to do to try to see how we could affect the situation positively for other people, not just myself.
You sound strong. Are you feeling okay now?
I'm feeling good. You know, I woke up today blessed like every day, Mike, and I can't complain at all. I have a loving wife and a beautiful daughter, and you know, my mother and my mother-in-law, and our family has really been great.
Great support system.
Yeah, but our extended family, I think our community, this is something that folks have really, you know, came out of the woodworks to help us, and I think it's only because of, you know, what Latifah's done in her past and her work and what I've done in my past and my present. And it's been a blessing to see, and I think that it's reaffirmed the power of people, mm-hmm. The power of information, and the power of love.
And I had said to Kevin and Latifah, because I've been, you know, at this helm now 20 years, and I've seen some magic happen in radio in terms of its impact in this particular program, if someone out there would like to donate, obviously we'd like to encourage you to do so. You might even find a match. That would be wonderful. It would certainly be extraordinary, and it would make everybody here happy. Kevin Weston and Latifah Simon with us. Jonathan Leong is the founder of the Asian American Donor Program, AADP. I mentioned that the numbers are just roughly the same for Asian Americans. Different reasons, though.
Oh, yeah, all different reasons, but a lot of it has to do with how you're approached and how you're recruited. just reminds me of what happened in Washington, D.C. once. Had a meeting, and we had doctors that went to – they were talking about going to an African-American church and did presentations to educate the people in the pews and saying we're here, and gave the details. And then when they actually stepped up the next week to bring the phlebotomist and everything, back in the old days, they had to draw blood. I mean, three tubes of blood for the testing, and nobody showed up. And he couldn't understand why. And I'm sitting there saying, "Well, just if you looked in the mirror, you would tell you why." I mean, but man, people don't understand. You know, a Caucasian doctor, great heart, wanted to help, but then there's a disconnect. So how you recruit is a huge issue if you're going to listen to the message and if you're going to internalize the message. In the Asian community, Asian community has an issue because there's really no such thing as an Asian. I use that all the time. Because what are you? They come to me, "Oh, I'm Chinese." Okay, well, you go to somebody else. "Oh, I'm not. I'm Japanese. I'm Korean. I'm Filipino. I'm Hmong. I'm, you know, all the way." You know, it just, that's the reality. How you recruit, how you talk to those people to get them to internalize the message is a huge issue.
It's not a recruitment, though. It's education. I mean, you have to kind of convince people that bone marrow regenerates every day. You have to convince people of just those sort of basic elemental facts, don't you?
Absolutely. The basic knowledge needs to be, and is not an organ. A lot of people say it's organ. It's not a solid organ. You don't have to die to donate. Your body regenerates it after a few weeks, so you can donate again. You can donate again. It's just like whole blood. So that breaks a lot of the barriers, but then, you know, when you're dealing with generations, you know, someone asks, "Well, I've been interviewed with organizations that, well, we want to get into the Asian community. How do we do it?" And I said, "Well, how much money do you have? And then it's, what do you want? Do you want first generation, second generation, third generation Japanese, the ones that were in internment? You want the Japanese from Japan? You want the Chinese from Hong Kong, different from the Chinese from Taiwan? You want the which generation? Again, how much money do you have?" So you have to pick. So that's our expertise with the Asian American Donor Program. We understand the various community subclasses, and we try to approach them so that they get the message and they internalize the message, which is always very difficult.
Don't you say there are different antigen types for all Asians? I mean, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, just look. Okay, East Indian, Patel. I mean, we don't look alike. You know, I was in Washington D.C. I mean, in Fred Hutch, we did something in Seattle. And one of my board members of the NMDP is staying right next to me. She's the question was asked, same question. Well, we're standing there. Oh, I'm 5 feet five, and And she's African-American. She's like 7 feet tall. I'm going, here's the difference. This is why we need to get the mix. The more the variety, the better. And the reality is that even today with mixed race in terms of the kids, yes. Caucasian, African-American kids, I mean, it's tougher. It's even more difficult. So the more the merrier, the more that we have on the registry.
Our community in
Jonathan
Vermont
Leon,
is
again,
listening.
Again, the founder of the Asian American Donor Program. I'm sorry, Lativa, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Our community in Vermont is listening right now as well. And we've been able to meet a number of young people from our community and our generation who are struggling with this disease. Andy Williams is a young African American and Filipino culture maker, more than a DJ, and he recently got a diagnosis of AML, which is also a rare form of aggressive leukemia. He's young, he's amazing, and he also lives in Vermont, where there are not a lot of Filipino and African-American mixed-race children and mixed-race young people. Well, the Bay Area is a hub for those two nationalities who've come together in love and in struggle. And so for Andy's and for all the young people and elders alike who are waiting for bone marrow transplants, who are of sort of this new new American collective of mixed-race folks, this campaign is more than just about Kevin.
But look, Latifa, people can find matches now, you know, in terms of cyber dating. They can find someone globally, you know,
that's right.
Who fits the bill in very specific ways. We can find people who are matches here. And
yep.
I want to go to Manali Patel on this, who's a postdoctoral fellow in hematology and oncology at Stanford School of Medicine. The truth of the matter is, and bare-bone truth is, it's awfully hard sometimes to find the matches, but we've got to have the donors.
Right, exactly. That the donors are just one complex interplay of factors that lead to these disparities. You know, as Kevin mentioned, he's very fortunate. He has the social means. Latifa has been an incredible caregiver for Kevin. He has the economic means. He has the access to care, but now you know, something that we struggle with every day as physicians is we have the chance to cure Kevin, but this is out of our hands. That as a physician, no matter what treatments I have, this is the one area where Kevin can be cured, and we're dependent on making this really a village to be able to give Kevin the cure that he deserves.
Can you talk about the different approaches, though, vis-a-vis cure? I mean, there's plain bone marrow, and then there's stem cell donation, right?
Right. So there's bone marrow transplantation, which, again, is I think that there's a misconception that it's an organ. It's not like donating a kidney. It's a very simple procedure that regenerates.
Kind of just a swab, really.
Exactly. It's a swab. Initially, to find a match, you have a swab of your cheek cells. Sometimes we'll get some blood to make sure that the genetics match Kevin's blood. And then it's a very simple procedure of collecting bone marrow from the spongy area inside of your bone at your hip. Very simple procedure. It regenerates within several weeks. Patients feel who have donated back to normal within 3 weeks. It causes a little bit of fatigue and a little bit of soreness. The other way of donating is through blood, where you have a very small catheter that's placed in one arm, and the blood is collected, and the stem cells, which are the immature cells, are collected off, and the rest of the blood is returned back to the donor.
I should also mention, I was looking at some of the research that shows that African-Americans and Hispanics actually do well with disease, though worse as donors and transplants.
Exactly. So what we found for leukemia in general, that despite patients like Kevin who are young, who have the likelihood of doing very well, we know that youth is a prognostic factor for leukemia, despite what type of leukemia you have. That the outcomes are still worse for African Americans and Hispanics. And I think that's because we don't have enough donors and we don't have a way to be able to increase bone marrow transplant for these patient populations, which is it's a large part of the treatment.
What do we know about the low number of Hispanics? Now, they're not as low as African Americans and Asian Americans, who are both at around 7%, like I said, but 10% is still low.
Right. You know, I think there's a misconception that the proportion of donors is equivalent to the proportion of the United States of minority groups, but it's not really what plays a role. Here we're looking for a match. I've heard patients tell me that it's like winning the lottery. that it's really about the numbers. You want the denominator to be as large as possible.
The biggest pool.
You
want
the biggest pool. Right. Exactly.
Well, there's a Nigerian lawyer I was reading about also who is an aspiring Olympic athlete who actually shifted and began a registry in Nigeria. And it's an inspiring story because anybody can really do this and move it forward. That's really what Kevin and Latifah are all about.
Exactly. It's about the community. This is the one place where it's not just about the treatments. It's not just about what the doctor can do in their office. It's about what we can do as a community.
But does it also depend on, like he's got this more virulent and rare form of leukemia. Does the match depend on the type of leukemia?
It doesn't necessarily, no. It's just the match. It's a treatment.
It's the genetic ancestral match.
Exactly.
Yeah. And well, let me invite those of you who are listening to join us, and we'll talk some more about how you can make a difference. And indeed, I can do nothing but really encourage and strongly encourage you to make a difference by making yourself a donor. And I'm not only talking to members of the minority community who have a dearth of those compared to white folks, but really to all people, because, you know, there are so many people in need. In fact, just looking at the numbers here, it's extraordinary how many people are – I mean, it's almost like waiting for a kidney in terms of just looking for a match or trying to get a match. If you'd like to join the conversation, we certainly welcome your calls for questions or comments. And our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786, so feel free to join us. 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, let us know your thoughts or join our conversation with questions or comments by going to our email address, forum@kqed.org, or posting any of your questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment. You can also go to our Facebook page, and you can also tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But certainly we welcome your involvement in this, talking with Latifah Simon and Kevin Weston. They are both essentially searching for a bone marrow match for Kevin, but also starting a program and, in fact, holding a bone marrow drive to recruit donors on the 19th of February at the Youth Uprising Center in Oakland. And that's from 4 to 6. And again, February 23rd at the Quad on 4th Street in Oakland from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. How else can people, if somebody out there says, well, I don't live in Oakland, I'm up in Sonoma, but I want to, how can they do it?
An easy way, and we'll certainly talk about this more during the program, is you can go to marrow.org and you can request a kit online and they will send it to you. I did it when Kevin was first diagnosed. I got my kit in 4 days. There's four, it looks like Q-tips, and you swab your cheek and literally it's self-addressed. You send it right back. And the Asian American Donor Program as well, you can go to their site, which is on the forum website I saw, and they'll also navigate you through. It's such an easy process. And so now, while I might not be a match for Kevin, like the millions of folks who join the registry, we're all waiting for a call to save someone else's life.
We're talking roughly, I just want to give some figures here, 55,000 transplants over the last 27 years, but 12 to 15,000 right now that we know of could benefit. That's a lot of folks who need, you know, donors. In fact, let's find out what – well, I'm going to go to your calls actually when I return and remind you that last year Kevin Weston, riding high, had just won a journalism fellowship at Stanford, was raising two daughters with his partner Latifah Simon, a civil rights activist and MacArthur Genius Fellow, and then doctors told him he had leukemia, needed a bone marrow transplant by the end of the month. He's African American, and that's only 7% of registered donors, and Kevin and Latifah are with us talking about their story, also discussing the low rates of minority participation and the long road to a successful transplant. And Jonathan Leong, also here with us, founder of the Asian American Donor Program, AADP, and Manali Patel, who's a postdoctoral fellow in hematology and oncology at Stanford School of Medicine and a researcher at the Clinical Excellence Research Center, which focuses on innovations in cancer care. We are going to break, but when we return, we'll hear from you, and you, our listeners, can make a difference. Make a donation here. I'm not talking about Pledge. I'm not talking about KQED Radio. I'm talking about saving people's lives. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about bone marrow transplants and the necessity for them. Thousands of people waiting and thousands of people looking for a match. And as we're saying here, you can make a difference. And certainly one of the most startling things that's come to people's attention is the low number of donors from ethnic American communities, 7% of African Americans, 7% of Asian Americans, and 10% of Hispanics, compared to larger numbers from the general population of Caucasians. And that in itself is disturbing, but we need donors, and that's what we're talking about here this hour. Mero.org is the place you can go to on the website to find out more about how you can make a difference and actually donate and find out if you're a match. And as Latifah Simon was saying when we were off air, if you don't have health insurance, it doesn't matter. You can still become a donor. Latifah?
Absolutely. Through our email pages and Facebook pages, we've received information from young people and old alike saying, I want to be a donor, but these are our obstacles. And one of the most touching emails that I received was a young woman who was in college at a historically black university, said, I don't have health insurance, but I want to be a donor. And what we know, and I was really educated through this process from Stanford, the BMT clinic, if a match is found for Kevin, no matter who it is, if it's a match, they will the BMT clinic will make it work. They will make it work for that person to get the, whether it's peripheral blood or marrow, and sometimes whether it's flying the person to the hospital, taking care of their travel, or just literally getting their marrow from where they are and putting somebody on a plane and getting it to the person who needs it. So that's something that we didn't know as well. If you feel compelled to be a donor and there is a match made, there are systems and supports and organizations that will make it work.
But you know, Manali, there are people afraid of this whole process. You've encountered that, haven't you?
I have, yes. We did a pretty significant needs finding, talking to patients and their providers and trying to figure out what some of the barriers are. Is it on the donor side? Is it on the physician side? We know that there are a complex interplay of factors that are at work here. And we heard that many patients are scared. There's a misconception that it's a long procedure, that it's a surgical procedure. It is a surgical procedure, but it's not like your typical surgery. There's a misconception that it's actually an organ. There's a misconception that the cells don't regrow back. There's a misconception that they may need these cells later in their lives. It's fascinating how when we have provided education and really targeted and tailored education to patients, how it changes their motivation to want to donate.
Well, I think there are some listeners who want to donate in terms of becoming part of the conversation. So let's find out what they have to say. And we begin with a caller from Austin, Texas. Juliana, good morning.
Good morning. I've been through the situation that Kevin and Latifah are facing right now. My my husband had leukemia, and we went through a long process of finding a donor. And it was very difficult. He wasn't a match to anybody in his family. And we actually went through the process for over a year to find that his leukemia was not as aggressive as Kevin's is, but every single day that you're looking for a donor is a little bit closer towards the inevitable. And we did finally find a donor. It took over a year to find one, and he was getting ready to have the procedure, and he went into the blastic phase, which at that point in time, you cannot accept a bone marrow transplant. And he passed away. So I know that there's a lot of spiritual people in the Bay Area.
Yep.
I used to live there. And if you really are a spiritual person, if you actually want to do something that would show how committed you are to your beliefs, then I would ask you to please register, not just for Kevin's sake, but for anybody else who might be out there. My husband passed away before he was 30. Mm. I was a widow before I was 30. And I would never wish that process on anybody. Every day waiting for somebody to come forward, because there is somebody out there who can help. There is someone out there who can help. And if you're a spiritual person, this is your duty to help other people. It's not as scary as you think it is. And whatever fear you have about needles or pain is nothing compared to what Kevin and Latifah are going through.
Well,
and what they will go through if they can't find a donor for him.
First of all, I'm so sorry, and I think I speak for all of us, for your loss. And thank you so much for telling your story and for really trying to make a difference here this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I'm praying for you guys that everything works out as it needs to, and for everybody else who's waiting, because there are many, many people who are waiting for somebody to be that angel and give them a chance. And I hope that people step up. I've been on the I'm half Native American, and I've been on the list since 2000, and that's in honor of my husband, that maybe I can help somebody else not go through what I had to go through.
Thank you again, Juliana.
So
appreciate very much your calling here this morning. And Jonathan Leong, I mean, you've been doing this for a number of years now. I mean, the difficulty of finding a match, sometimes you have to go through just repetitively, person after person, don't you?
Well, you know, we talk about getting the numbers in there, and the more, and again, the more the merrier. If we can have, you know, millions of people. I mean, there's 10 million within the national, the Beat a Match group, and then worldwide there's a lot more. So that's the difficulty is that you're matching DNA. You're not matching blood type. So your DNA comes from two people, your mom and your dad. So you are going to be some combination of your mom and your dad. So that's why the ethnicity is such an issue because it really follows back through. You can find as people travel through to immigrate into this country, even in a Hispanic community, if they came through Mexicali and they were down there, I would go there, you know, to look for the matches because the DNA comes the same way. It is difficult.
Fact-checking is very important to us at Forum, as many of you know, and I did say on air that I believe that syphilis was injected into black men for the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. A number of people have written in to correct that, actually correcting both me and Dr. Patel here, because a book called Examining Tuskegee, the author says, quote, there is absolutely no evidence that the men were given or injected with the bacteria that causes syphilis. She says it's very difficult to transmit. The scandal was about doctors not treating them and not informing people that they had the disease. That's the correction. I thought differently. I must confess I want to get my friend Peter Buxton on here if he's listening because he was the guy who blew the whistle on this whole Tuskegee thing. But in the meantime, let me go to more of your calls. From Hayward, Farine, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
This is the first time I'm calling. Congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you.
My question is, how painful is the procedure?
Manali Patel?
Not painful at all. In fact, the donor is put to sleep. So the only pain that someone would feel is like a little bit of a prick when you get your finger pricked, and that's the needle that is being used to provide the anesthesia, so that the donor doesn't feel any pain at all. What the donor does feel later is a little bit of soreness, almost a little bit of back soreness where the bone marrow has been taken, and maybe a little bit of fatigue, but that goes away pretty quickly.
Let me think. You had something else you wanted to add, Farine? Yeah.
I'm Asian American. I'm actually I'm from Pakistan, and is it possible for someone that's Asian American to help someone that is of African American descent?
Yes, it is. It's all based on your DNA. You can match. I know quite a few people, even mixed race, Japanese and Italian, and the perfect match was someone that was 100% Italian. I mean, it's just it's there. It's DNA. There's no ethnicity. Actually, it's all your numbers, all your DNA.
Well, apropos of that, I've got a listener who says, a listener named Kevin, who says, listening to the discussion regarding Kevin and Latifah, do you have to be African-American to be a possible match? Are there such large racial differences in our genetic makeup that the match pool cannot include Caucasians?
There's certain markers that are more common with each race. So if you match those common markers, it's like, let's say there's a B42 that is within the Asian community or Chinese community, maybe 1 in 5,000. But that same marker in the Caucasian is 5 million, 1 in 5 million. So, you know, you go for the lowest hanging fruit.
Have you looked in Africa registries or what there are of African registries?
We have. Actually, Stanford, the team there who we originally linked up with when we found out that Kevin is going to need this transplant earlier on in his diagnosis, they've worked with us to do an expansive match, an international search. One of the things I think is important to note that while, of course, we are looking for a match for Kevin, this campaign is about changing the odds for folks who can't have match, who have not found matches. I want to remind folks that just here in San Francisco, there's a beautiful little boy who actually just came home. He's passed his 100 days after his bone marrow transplant. His name is Jake. And Jake went to New Traditions Elementary School right here in San Francisco, and he is Irish. There took a worldwide effort to find little Jake a match. And that match came at the last moment, and his parents just reached out to us to tell his story for us to be continually inspired, but understanding that it's about changing the odds for all of the folks like Kevin who are waiting, who have to sit in chairs and get chemo day after day and infusions day after day, who are just waiting for that one angel to go to Merrill.org, swab, and in 3 to 4 weeks, you could literally be a hero. And that's what we're saying. Yes, we want a match for Kevin, but we don't want anybody waiting. Like the caller earlier said, you know, that every day, it's a challenge, but we are spiritual people and we do believe in miracles, not only for us, but for this new community and this new fraternity that we've entered of folks who are waiting.
And let me bring in a caller who's been waiting patiently. Debbie from Sacramento, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? You know, first of all, I want to thank you so much for bringing this show to the air and educating our people. I'm here in Sacramento and I work closely with Blood Source on a regular basis. I am a survivor. I'm coming up on my 6th birthday. We all survivors right. Talk about birthday, new birthday. So May of this year, 6th birthday. So I was diagnosed when I turned 50 with AML. And here I am today, living proof that it does happen. With the grace of God and all the support that I had, I am here to talk to you all today.
Well, let's hope we can hear of Kevin Weston's birthday a number of years from now in that same vein. Thank you, Debbie, for the call. And
thanks for making my wife cry, Debbie.
Kevin, stay positive. It will happen. It will happen. Keep the faith. And all of you folks out there, it is very easy. You can save a life. A simple swab, that donation, the resources are there to help you get through this. You can make it happen.
You know, I don't want to sound like the Reverend Jesse Jackson here, but keeping hope alive is a very important part of what we're talking about, isn't it?
That's right.
Dr. Patel, yeah.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, the strength that patients have and their caregivers and their loved ones, it's all about keeping the hope. And we do that an hour every single day when I have a patient in front of me. I pray that we'll be able to find a match.
But you said earlier that youth makes a big difference. Hope can make a big difference,
exactly.
Too. I mean, just in terms of mind-body and all that we have learned about that connection. Here's Lou who writes, some interesting ideas from listeners. How about going to every blood bank that does blood donations and having them put a check off on their donation form that allows them to submit your data or a sample to the transplant clearinghouse?
Yes.
And Ron says, why isn't there a public health effort to screen masses of people, for example, through the DMV, health insurance providers like Kaiser or public schools?
Those are great ideas. And whoever wrote in, you should probably run for Congress, or, you know, and become leadership, because this is what this this campaign has taught me. One is that I think we have the capacity, regular people have the capacity to come up with solutions to our problems. And if those ideas, you know, were able to wade through the muck and actually become policy, they will make the world better. So I really appreciate that great idea. And I'll be calling all the politicians I know, you know, and there's some in this city that have been
some are listening as we speak, Kevin.
Yes,
and
yes,
have
sir.
Been amazing to us. We got married, Kamala Harris, renewed our vows. Folks on the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco literally donated out of their own pockets to make sure that the donor event happened at City Hall last week. The outpour of support from folks at Stanford. And we actually have a long list of people that we wrote down who've just been super tremendous. Our friends and family and politicians and donors and our folks who run foundations. They're getting the word out with us and for us.
You got a long thank you list. Huh?
It's ridiculous.
I do. It's actually a big piece of paper. But I think just to reiterate what Latifah's saying, you know, we've been put in this position for a reason. I'm trying to make a positive situation out of a negative one. And the fact that we've been able to do what we have been in such a short amount of time is actually motivating me and motivating the people around us to do something like that caller suggests, or to try to get something done that would help change the situation positively. I think not a lot of people get a chance to actually save someone's life, But I think when presented with that opportunity, it's a human thing to want to do that.
Well, the links are now on our website.
Yes, sir.
No, I just want everybody to know that. And the bone marrow drives to recruit donors are imminent February 19th at the Youth Uprising Center in Oakland from 4 to 6, and February 23rd at the Quad on 4th Street in Oakland from 10 a.m. right on to 3 p.m. So there's ample opportunity, especially if you're in Oakland, or just go to, again, marrow.org. Here's Alicia, who writes, I'm a bone marrow donor. A good friend in college died from leukemia 23 years ago. It's incredible how far science has come since then. I'm having a baby in July, and I'm considering banking my baby's cord blood as an insurance policy for them. Could you comment on the new science? And I wish Kevin all the best in his recovery. What do we know about that, Manali Patel? You're going to defer here to Mr. Leong?
Yeah, he knows a lot about it.
Cord blood is umbilical cord blood is very interesting. Banking your cord blood, when you bank your cord blood, they don't do the tests as if you're banking for a public donation. So a lot of it is not done. So even if your markers are not tested to go onto a public registry, if you're donating your umbilical cord blood to a public registry, then they would do the DNA, the HLA markers and everything, and do all the tests on it. And then your cord blood is frozen, and that whoever uses it. If you're banking it for yourself, there's a couple of reasons that you would want to bank it for your child. Number one reason is if there's cancer, a history of cancer in the family, then you want to bank it. The other reason is if mixed race. If if the most difficult match probably right now to find is mixed race, so you might want to do that. So if there's a history of cancer and mixed race, then I would say go for it. You know,
let me go back, Dr. Patel, to you for a moment here to respond to a listener who says, I have a family member who recently had a stem cell transplant. My husband and I wanted to register to be donors, but we are over 60. We're told we don't qualify. My relative sister's over 70. It was a perfect match, so her cells were used. Can you explain why donors have to be under 60?
Yeah, so there are a lot of factors that go into looking for the right donor. And one of the reasons is there are sometimes mutations in cells. The older that you get, the more your cells change. And there are concerns that after the age of 60, after the age of 65, that those cells continuously change and that they may actually it may be more difficult for someone that's older to be able to donate. It may be also more difficult for the cells to be as healthy as they are to be able to provide the best chance for cure for someone like Kevin.
Let me just read a few more emails, and we'll go to more of your calls. Here's Michael in Berkeley. He says, I'm multi-ethnic. My descent includes East Indian, Black, and White. I've been on the registry since 2005 and haven't been called. I get emails from the registry, so I assume I'm still registered. Do I have to register again? And if not, why does it take so long to get a match?
Well, a couple of things that I think is really important for us personally, that thank you so much for keeping your information updated on marrow.org, your phone number, your email address. And initially, two matches, almost perfect matches, were found for Kevin. And we were flying high. And the registry was trying to contact them. And what we got back, two, not one, 9 out of 10 matches, we learned that they were quote-unquote unavailable. So that can mean a couple of different things. One, that they said, you know what, this is just too deep for me. I never thought I would get called. I'm not ready to do this because of misinformation. They probably just got freaked out, didn't return calls. Their health could have changed, or they simply couldn't find them, right? And so for, I would say, over 6 weeks, we were trying to contact donors. That was a huge time waste for us. Not waste, I should say, but that really impacted.
No, but how frustrating,
It's heartbreaking. But we, again, for every challenge that we face in our plight, we know that then it's an opportunity to educate. So when you sign up for the registry, keep your number there and be ready to go when you're called, because you never know when you could be called in 15 years. You could be called next week. As our communities change in the United States, as more folks from different ethnic groups come together and have babies, you're going to be needed. Leukemia is a monster, but it's not only leukemia. It's a lot of different diseases, which we're learning and we're starting to understand more, and maybe the doctor can tell us more. But sickle cell anemia, there's a young woman who we just learned about, and her mother's literally been at car washes holding signs, please donate. She needs a bone marrow.
It's a whole range of blood diseases, Dr. Patel, we're talking
about.
Right,
right.
Though the focus has been on leukemia, certainly. And here's Joshua, who asks via Twitter, do the restrictions for blood donation from LGBT people also apply to bone marrow? And if so, could reviewing these regulations help? Anybody know?
I think it's personally, as Kevin and I have been active in supporting our LGBTQ community and friends, they're clearly a part of a deep part of our lives. We are in struggle together. And I think one of the things that we have to get past in this fight is these old school understandings about who should be able to donate. There are regulatory issues that we've learned, but our friends who've been a part of our movement have gone beyond those issues and registered. And I think that the FDA needs to change its requirements, because what we know in the LGBT community, for the last 25 years, more sex education has gone into safe sex and good practices than in the heterosexual community. So our gay and lesbian friends are often in better health and have lower risk, we know, than folks in the heterosexual community.
Yes, right now everything is based on, I think it's all the same as if you're donating whole blood. If you went to donate whole blood, if you're able to donate whole blood, you'll be able to be a donor as of the standards established today. But before we go on, I think the reality of younger donors that they're looking for is the outcome is simple. The outcome shows that if you're the younger the donor, the better the outcome. So that's why they're looking toward that. And as people who are listening today want to step up and donate the Beat a Match or National Marrow Donor Program, they're looking at 18 to 44-year-old. So if you're beyond 44, they're not going to take you. So, but between 18 and 44 is the age that they will take the tests.
And let me bring Andrea on here. Andrea, thanks for waiting. Join us, please.
Hi. I just want to address the issue of there's a superstition within the African American community about blood donation and cancer. My brother had leukemia 5 years ago, and we're both of mixed race background, Caucasian and African American. And we went to our church and stood up and talked about, you know, the need for donors. And a woman stood up right after us and said that if you receive blood or bone marrow, that it makes the cancer cells act up and circulate around your body. And almost everyone in the church kind of was nodding and agreeing. And I think that superstition is pretty widely held.
Wow. Anybody want to comment? Kevin?
Well, I think ignorance isn't particular to the African-American church. And I also think that the African-American church is going to make a big difference in our campaign. Pastor Michael McBride in Berkeley, who's a national figure on gun violence and other issues that are affecting our community, is doing about eight to ten blood drives in black churches.
But there is a stigma among some faiths about diseases.
We talked about it earlier, and I think that it's really a situation where only education can solve that problem. Only if Latifah, I think folks have to be confronted with people they know. Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about strangers coming into our midst, telling us, you know, what's better for us. But, you know, if Latifah and I show up, or if, you know, Pastor McBride is telling his congregation what the deal is, then real information gets out and those that the ignorance gets swept away.
You hope. Here's Joe from San Jose who's
it will. I'm sorry. We believe that it will. Folks like Vincent Pan, he's the executive director of Chinese for Affirmative Action. He actually donated and he saved a little girl's life. And he's been evangelizing around this issue here in San Francisco and actually all over California, dispelling the myths. And he says all the time, it felt like somebody pinched me in my back. And then it was done and I was back to work the next week. The Warriors actually illuminated a PSA that Vincent did for Kevin's campaign, but also for all folks of people of color and minorities. And it was just illuminated at last week's game. So we hope that, like we believe, like segregation and racism and all of these issues that activists and organizers come together to eradicate, we believe that we're now in this battle that we, again, didn't know about. And we're going to change the odds. We're going to change the information.
Well, here's Joe from San Jose who says, I'm a Mexican-American. I donated marrow for a woman in France. Mm-hmm. Turns out my family is from an area in Mexico heavily populated by the French during their occupation of the country, even though the French occupied Mexico. My doctor theorized that that was the genetic link, so I urge your audience to get on the registry. You never know who you can help.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Yep, that's
what that's what I love about this campaign and about what we've learned over the past couple of months. Latifa and I have always done interracial, cross-racial work, but this is the ultimate in that work, where you're actually in fellowship with people all over the world, and people who, you know, supposedly don't have any connection, and you were separated by race and class and gender and, you know, our economic status. And this is the kind of stuff that breaks those barriers down, and you can actually help someone. And I think that's the beauty of it and what I love most about it.
Well, that's the kind of thing that gives you faith in humanity.
That's
people step up to the plate and they put themselves out there. In fact, a lot of people are asking, expressing their concern about being over 60 and wanting to help. And what can they do, really, is the question.
Encourage others to donate. It's unfortunate that we do have these age restrictions, but we do know that we want the bone marrow to actually work. When we found the donor, it doesn't just stop there. There's a long process after the transplant. But we think the education, I think it's a unique opportunity when we actually hear what the barriers are and why people are scared to donate. That's a very unique opportunity where that piece of information is crucial to being able to turn it around and provide that targeted education.
We have very little time left, but the mom of Jake, the young Irish boy who was mentioned, is on the phone here. Kimberly,
oh,
hi.
Goodness, I'm crying again.
Hi, this is Kimberly, and I just wanted to call in Latifa and Kevin. I wanted you to know that we got that call, and it was a miracle, because when Jake was diagnosed, he had aplastic anemia. There was no match. We outreached like you. We had an amazing community. Our donor came from Ireland, and, it happened. It really happened, and we did a short video on Jake's website to dispel some of the myths about donation. It's matchjake.org. We made it fun, and it's animated. And we found that a lot of people were really scared. And so we knew that we had a job of dispelling those myths about donation. And then it happened. We got the call, and he has had his transplant, and he's doing great.
Well,
so,
congratulations. We are very pleased to hear that. And I'm hoping we're going to hear a similar story from Kevin Weston and Latifa Simon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you to Jonathan Leong. Thank you to Manali Patel. And thank you to you, our listeners. Forums produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor, Dan Zoll. And executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.